Welcome to the Student Housing Insight Podcast. This is your host, Wesley Dees, and I'm joined with my co-host, Greta Dare. Greta, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
Glad to hear it. I'm doing fine.
Lovely.
And this episode is sponsored by Providential Student Housing. As most of the audience knows, Providential Student Housing is actually my company. It's a student housing consulting and business development firm that I started this past year. You know, developing and operating student housing can be confusing, and you'll never hear myself or Greta or anyone make light of that fact. And our services help student housing owners and operators get clarity so they can move forward with certainty. So if you've got any student housing issues, regardless if you're new to the industry or have been in it just as long as I have, and you just want to have somebody to have a discussion with and make sure that you're making the right moves and making the right choices, feel free to give us a call. Our website is providentialstudenthousing.com. Well, Greta had a very interesting interview this past week.
I know. I think it's an exciting one.
You know, speaking of student housing being confusing, I think one of the most confusing things can certainly be on the recruiting of employees and the retention of employees.
And, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, you know, I wanted to get some other people's opinions on it, and actually went to two recruiters, Nancy Giles and Stephanie Nolan, who are on two different coasts, Stephanie out in San Diego and Nancy in Pittsburgh, and really wanted to, you know, get their insights on, you know, what they're seeing, what they're hearing. And I think we've got some really good content for the owners, regardless if you're, you know, if you're looking to hire, if you're looking to figure out what you need to do in order to keep your employees happy, or, you know, if you're looking at, hey, it's time for me to move up and I want to understand what I need to do, what I need to think about, you know, in order to develop out my career. This is a great podcast for you to listen to because they've got some great insight on that.
I agree.
And, you know, strangely enough, I was checking out your LinkedIn page, or I guess it actually came up in my feed of something that you shared from a recruiter. So, and I thought it was just perfect for this episode.
It's true. I actually liked it on LinkedIn, and it was a post by another recruiter. And I just, while we were standing there, happened to catch it. And she's the founder of Talent Savant. And she made a post about companies, what they can basically do to actually make their great employees unpoachable. And I think that here in student housing, it is one of the biggest issues we face. I think that every single one of us, you know, it's like there's a lot of bouncing back and forth between companies. There's a lot of career growth that happens in that regard. And I think in a lot of ways, I mean, that's great. But there are a lot of companies that get really upset about it, that, you know, their employees leave and they're going to the next companies. I've seen cease and desists and non-compete threats. And, you know, it's all across my career, it's been a thing. And it's interesting to get the perspective of the recruiter. And I really, really appreciated everything that she said. And it's funny because so many people, not so many, but there were, you know, a good handful of people that had negative things to say about this. And it was really to create a good relationship with recruiters in general. You know, if it's just the ones in your industry, then, you know, have a few or at least a handful that you have a good relationship with, a good trusting relationship with. Because the thing about having a relationship with a recruiter, and coming from somebody who every single position that I left, it was through a recruiter, you're completely honest with them about your current employer. You're completely honest with them about your current employment situation. And you tell them everything that you're facing, and as well as what it is that you're looking for and why you're looking for it. And that is incredibly valuable, straightforward, honest information that as employees, and this is the key part that I think a lot of the people who were posting negative comments in regards to it, they're failing to recognize, is that as an employee, we don't always have that feeling of openness where we can go to somebody above us, yeah, or go to HR or talk to somebody. And everybody wants to think that they've created that environment. But I mean, let's be honest, especially when we're talking about corporate positions, there's a lot of politicking that you have to worry about and toe stepping. And who are you going to tell this to that, you know, is going to leave out names, or, you know, they're not going to go to the wrong person or say the wrong thing. And yeah, it just creates a more toxic environment. And so your only solution is to leave. You know, and I've been in that situation before, and it's, you know, I know a lot of people that have, because there's just not a safe outlet for you to go to and really get a logical solution to this problem. And
yeah, so go ahead.
Well, I think that especially for the higher, you know, executive level positions, it's truly important to get that actual feedback, regardless of whether or not you think you have an incredible relationship with your, you know, every single team member below you. Those recruiters are going to know the ins and the outs, and you shouldn't ask for names. They shouldn't give them out, and most likely they won't, and you shouldn't need names, but you should be able to find out about properties where there's a toxic environment, where you have general managers that are potentially showing you one face when you visit the property, or you have calls with them, versus what it's actually like when you're not there communicating with those people, or, you know, in your senior management team. You may very well have somebody that's causing, you know, your on-site team or your regionals, whatever the case may be, to leave because they just aren't the best leaders, and perhaps they need more guidance, mentoring, or they just aren't actually the right person for the job, and you just needed to hear it from one more source that is outside of the company, and that recruiter can be that source.
Yeah. And not even just, you know, as an employee or a supervisor and wanting to find out how your employees are doing, you know, using a recruiter for some of that feedback. The other part of it is, you know, from a business development standpoint. You know, if you're looking at a potential acquisition in a market that you're not used to, or you're doing a development in a market that you haven't been to before, there hasn't been a lot of information that you've been able to find, and you're thinking about, because look, these properties don't operate themselves. If they did, I would have invented that already. But they don't manage themselves. It requires people, and you know, the location of many of these properties in student housing, as we discuss in this interview, it's not the easiest to recruit for. And knowing that, you know, you may look at a Morgantown, West Virginia, or a College Station, Texas, and say, well, wow, there's a lot of properties there. It should be very easy to recruit for. And that's not the case at all. It just trying to get people to go to that area or go to those particular areas, it's tough. And trying to get people to stay there after they graduate. Maybe they were a great student worker, but trying to get them to stay there after they graduate is going to be very tough. And so there's a lot of things like that, you know, going into a new market, I think it's absolutely critical. I did this and didn't even realize I was doing it until I read your post, because there were so many times I would call up Nancy or some other recruiter and say, hey, we're about to acquire in such and such market, and I know we're going to need a general manager. You know, do you have anybody? You know, we haven't acquired the property, but we need to start, you know, we need to start interviewing. And, you know, almost immediately I would, you know, I'd get some kind of feedback about, you know, not just did they have anybody or not, but hey, here are the things you're going to want to stay away from in that market. You know, I've already recruited X, Y, and Z for ABC company, and it didn't work out so well. So you're probably going to get this person's resume if you put a you know, a blind ad out there, don't respond to them.
Yeah.
So there's so many things like that I think, you know, just like you said, it's very important for owners, operators, and anybody that's in that hiring process, you know, across the country in multiple markets, that you're making a relationship with recruiters in this industry, because those relationships can certainly prove to be very valuable. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, with that being said, let's push play.
All right.
Ladies, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, Wes. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this morning I've got Stephanie Nolan and Nancy Giles, who are both recruiters in the space. Nancy on the East Coast and Stephanie located in San Diego. Of course, both of you guys recruit across the country, but I did think that, you know, you guys would probably have a little bit of an interesting perspective being on the two different coasts and some of your recruiting being a little bit more specialized within those regions. And I wanted to bring you guys on the podcast to really understand the recruiter's perspective. Obviously, there's a lot that, you know, I've seen in the past as an employer and that most of our audience has seen as an employer. And those experiences, you know, may be drastically different from what the candidate experiences. And you guys are able to be in a position where you're hearing the feedback from both. So I felt like what a better opportunity than to have you guys together and, you know, talk about some of the things that you would like for the audience members to keep in mind as they're recruiting and really, trying to retain retain employees as well. So, hey, before we get into that, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourselves? Stephanie, if you want to go first.
Sure. My name is Stephanie Nolan, and I'm the founder principal at SVC Professional Search. And I have been recruiting for about 21 years. I got my start in the dot-com industry and moved into student housing in about 2009. I worked for a company called Campus Advantage. And what I did when I came in was really restructure their recruiting department. And I learned the industry really from the ground up. And at this time, I recruit everything from leasing managers to GMs on site, up to C-level executives and everything in between at the manager level.
Very cool. And Nancy?
Good morning. My name's Nancy Giles. My background's actually kind of similar to Stephanie's. I have been recruiting specifically in real estate for about 17 years. About 5 years ago, I started my own firm, AAP Advisors, working really, you know, across different disciplines, across different product types. Very, very heavily involved over the last 4 or 5 years in the multifamily as well as the student housing space, and work, you know, with clients all over the country at all levels, placing folks with them. So, like Stephanie mentioned, from site level, clear up into the corporate office and C-suite level people as well.
Gotcha. Well, so guys, you've heard it, and these are definitely two folks that have been responsible for a lot of hiring in this industry. So I think we've got two great guests here to give us some insight that maybe we're not used to getting. So guys, you know, I've spoke with both of you guys in the past, and Nancy, you and I have worked together on several positions in the past as well. And it's a tough, tough industry. You know, it's got its own, you know, specific cycle that revolves around the academic cycle, which, you know, puts a lot of issues with recruiting, because you've got people that, you know, don't necessarily want to take on another opportunity or afraid of taking on another opportunity before leasing season is out, because they've got leasing commissions based off of that cycle that would be coming in, and just a lot of variables out there. And I felt like it was a good episode to give to our audience and try to, you know, help them kind of see past some of the things that maybe they can deal with recruiting a little bit more proactively. But let me just start with this question. What challenges do you guys commonly come across when recruiting for student housing positions? Stephanie, if you want to take that first.
The biggest challenge I am seeing recently, and I'll even preface this by saying 2017 has been one of the most difficult years I've ever had in recruiting. The biggest challenge I'm seeing now is that there has been an influx of new owners and investors in the market. A lot of multifamily companies are coming in and trying to, you know, get their foot in the student housing door. And, you know, what was even 2 years ago a relatively small industry has just exploded this year. And there's so many new opportunities out there. And the candidate pool is still, for the most part, the same size. So that's the biggest challenge that I've seen. It's just there's not as many well-qualified candidates as there was just a few years ago. Gotcha. There's a lot of new remote locations coming online. For example, Montana is one that I've seen exploding this year, Oklahoma, and those sort of remote locations are challenging as well. So there's been a lot of new challenging variables this year.
So yeah, remote locations, that's always, you know, as these second tier universities begin to grow and there's more focus on development there, it's always tough to convince somebody that's got the student housing experience to go to those locations. Nancy, how about you? What are some of the common challenges you're coming across?
I don't really see the difficulties that Stephanie just mentioned, but I know one of the huge things that we deal with when working with on-site level personnel is just, you know, it's a younger demographic. They're younger people that you're working with, and that just really brings all sorts of challenges to the table for us. You know, they tend to jump around a little bit more. You know, employers want someone that, you know, has stayed with a company for, you know, more than a year and a half or 2 years at a time. So, you know, we have problems in that area. The markets are definitely, like Stephanie mentioned, a difficulty that we deal with. You know, by definition, they're typically college towns. Mm-hmm. You know, it's difficult to recruit people into those areas. A lot of times it's really difficult to find talent already there. You know, I had a candidate tell me recently, oh yeah, I know that area. I've heard of it. It's not the end of the world, but you can certainly see it from there. So, you're trying to talk someone into moving to Weatherford, Oklahoma, you know, it can get difficult at times.
So let me just kind of pose the question a little bit differently, not as far as what the challenges are, but let's talk about geography a little bit more. If I was to say, would you, as far as the perfect kind of scenario that is easy for you guys to place, if, you know, Stephanie with San Diego State or, you know, with Raleigh, North Carolina, where you've got, you know, this additional, you know, overlay of economic development that goes beyond the university, is that much more easier to recruit for than, you know, the Weatherford, Oklahoma, or the let's even add Gainesville, Florida to it. I mean, obviously tier one school, but you know, outside of that town lives and breathes the institution. So, you know, if someone's wanting to has a spouse or something like that, I imagine, you know, Gainesville is probably a little tough for them. So what's the most ideal location that you guys are able to fill pretty quickly?
For me, Stephanie, I would say Gainesville is actually a fairly easy market for me, really anywhere in Florida. San Diego, surprisingly for me, it's actually very tough to get people to relocate here, really for the cost of living, if there's no housing provided. Especially, people are really scared of the taxes here, which I don't blame them. But, you know, they have never been here, they never lived here, and they just hear horror stories about how expensive it is. And they really, you know, they say, I won't go there for anything less than $150K.
Oh, wow.
And that's, I mean, it's unreasonable. So surprisingly, it's very easy, or it's very difficult for me to get people to the West Coast. That includes Seattle, that includes UGA, Oregon, which is not the cost of living, but it's far from home for a lot of people. But Gainesville, anywhere in Florida, Texas is a fairly easy market for me. And most places along the East Coast I find are easy or easier fills for me as opposed to anywhere on the West Coast.
Interesting. Nancy?
Yeah, I have to agree with absolutely everything Stephanie just said. I don't do a lot of West Coast work. Just, you know, I I used to. I don't any longer, and it's simply because I don't need to. I, you know, instead of having those 9 p.m. phone calls, I just don't need to do work over there anymore. But it's difficult to find people for me on the West Coast. Stephanie, do you run into that? It was just not a huge...
To find candidates that are already located on the West Coast?
Yes.
Yes, that is a challenge for me as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in San Diego, but there's only a handful of student housing properties. Tons of apartments, but that are, you know, multifamily or within other boundaries. Many student housing folks. So yes, I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah.
So if I was, let me just throw this out there. So if I was in a assistant manager position or maybe even a GM position, looking to grow into the next position or place myself with a company that I may not necessarily have an opportunity for on the on the East Coast or somewhere in the middle of the country, California is a great opportunity for, hey, if you can go there and rough it for 2 years in California, it's probably going to pay off in the long run. Is that what you're saying, Stephanie?
I don't think it's any different than any other market. If you come and tough it for 3 years, in San Diego or in Norman, Oklahoma, 3 years in the industry is 3 years in the industry. I don't find that changes anything very much.
Yeah, just the I guess what I'm getting more to is if a current person in the in the industry is having a hard time finding something within their particular market that they're in. Thinking about moving and maybe moving to the West Coast could present a great opportunity that they may not be able to find in their own backyard. But yeah, I agree with you as far as experience. 3 years is 3 years, and I think anybody that's going to be looking at that is going to have, regardless of what market it's in, is going to appreciate it. So let's move on to the next question. Nancy, what recommendations would you have for employers in recruiting and retention of employees?
That's a great question, Wes. What I see happening with a lot of companies at this that have younger folks at the site level is that they just do not have the training put together for these people like they should. Mm-hmm. I can't say that often enough. I hear it all of the time from people that I place that, they're just not getting, they don't feel like they're getting the training. That may come from a lot, what Stephanie was speaking to earlier with, so many new companies getting into this space, and they're just, they're just trying to grow like crazy, and they're not putting together the policies and the procedures, and that's trickling down to those site level people.
Yeah, there's definitely a correlation with smart growth and taking the time to do those things when it comes to retention. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I've been in that situation. You open up shop, as a management company. And you're immediately trying to control that P&L and getting the right people in the right seat. And oftentimes the training part is what's left on the back burner. And you let it simmer too long, you're going to be spending a lot of money on recruiting later, because you're going to, your people are going to leave you. They're going to go somewhere else. Yeah,
absolutely. I also, I see clients that they never even meet these people face to face. They'll do phone interviews. They don't fly them out to the properties. They don't fly them into the corporate office to meet them face to face. I think it's really important that you sit down across a desk from someone and, you meet them before you actually hire them.
Yeah, we're talking about, many situations handing over, the keys to, let's talk about a general manager position, because I think that's mainly, what you were referring to there. You're talking about a position that is going to be leading the culture, the microculture of that property and that office staff. And even though, a corporate office may have, great culture and great leadership, you've got to make sure that person is going to be able to, identifies with that culture and is able to replicate it, at the site level. It's never going to be exactly the same. I'd love to be able to tell people, hey, this is how you do it. But, the truth of the matter is, the culture is made up of the people that are there. And while, a corporate office has a great influence over it, there's no way that it can be, 100% replicated. And I think where you get the closest to doing that is on the recruitment side. And exposing someone, at the beginning of what that culture should look like, and understanding if they're going to identify with it and be able to replicate it. And you can't do that over the phone. You and I had experience with that, Nancy. We had a candidate that was fantastic over the phone. And about 4 weeks later, I was calling you and saying, this isn't going to work.
It is very unfortunate. And so many companies today, I see it constantly, Wes. They don't take the time to really, flesh out who this person is. And a lot of times they don't have good interview skills themselves. When's the last time companies, put any of their hiring managers through training, learning how to interview? I mean, there's a science to it. And I think that would be very helpful, for companies to start doing that as well.
Yeah. Stephanie.
I absolutely agree with that as well. The majority of hiring managers, I don't think know how to properly interview either. They'll just fire off a list of questions and then they say, I'm done with the interview, or it didn't go well. And it's how could an interview go well if someone is just, firing off questions at you and not responding or talking to you further about those things? I really like to have candidates sort of tell me a story about who they are, walk me through their day. And they really open up as to what they're proud of or what they have challenges with. Just talking with a candidate, I think you really get to know them a lot better than just, are they giving you an answer that you wanted or not?
Yeah, that's a really great
point. I do agree with that.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I mean, when I was interviewing a lot with candidates, it was, I had a process to it, and that process started out with just the first phone call. And of course, it depends on I would make a suggestion to everybody. If it's using a recruiter like Nancy and Stephanie, or if it's somebody internally, make sure that, if you're sitting in a general manager chair and looking to hire other people on site, or if you're, at a regional level or an executive level and you're hiring a site specific, have someone to just do an initial interview that's just getting a lot of the basics out of the way. And, using recruiters like Stephanie and Nancy were always a lot better at that than just having, an admin assistant or an HR director. And there was a lot of things that, that Nancy, I know with my experience in working with you, you were able to, I didn't have to waste a lot of my time on folks. So I'll be sending you a Christmas card for that. Going back to that process, the first phone call was just having them give me their background. And, I'd always tell them, hey, give me the Stephanie Nolan show. Give me the, whatever their name was. I wanted them to know they've got 30 minutes to tell me everything And not that I just, you know, wanted to hear about their, you know, their background, but, you know, what were their passions? You know, what were the kind of things they were involved with, you know, in high school that, you know, play a significant part in what they're doing today. And I did notice, Stephanie, as you know, as you mentioned, they were much more open than just going through and answering questions to me. Right.
Right.
So that I think,
you did mention something else that I think you really hit on is a lot of HR managers are doing these initial phone screens or these initial interviews. And in my experience, I would say 95% of HR managers have no recruiting experience. You know, they know HR laws and they know, you know, the administrative sort of side, but have no experience in recruiting. And to me, that's just, that's not the way that I would go. And that's not all HR managers, but in my experience, that's pretty much been the case.
Yeah, I think having someone from an HR team that's able to at least confirm, you know, the salary that they're looking for and is geography going to work out for them. I think some basic questions like that, I think is, what you would want to use somebody to do so that you're at least, manager's not spending
qualified.
Manager's not spending their time, finding out that, someone's a complete dud.
Right.
They may not be a dud, but it's just not going to work for the particular position.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, go ahead. Go right in.
If I could interject real quick on that, I actually, you Wes, you brought up your process when you were doing a lot of interviewing, and I actually sat in on, or listened in, I guess I should say, on a couple of interviews when you were interviewing some of my candidates, and your process I thought was fantastic because you were able to bring out areas that I, even after 5 phone calls with this person, I did not bring out in them. And I've actually I've actually started incorporating your process into a lot of what I'm doing with candidates, you know, on the first level before my clients ever see them. And it's been extremely helpful. And I don't know, did you ever have an opportunity to pass that down to any of your hiring managers?
We certainly discussed it at retreats and things like that. And I certainly laid it out for our GMs, several times a year because they would go through the process of hiring CAs, and it's like, look, let's don't waste our time with this. Let me go through and I want you to spend time doing this, but I don't want you wasting any time. And, let's be not just efficient with it, but let's make sure that time is being done, from a quality standpoint. That was something very intentional I had to work on, Nancy. It wasn't something that, I just came up with on my own. It really came from a lot of research, reading books, listening to a lot of podcasts about recruiting and that type of thing. But, and I'll just break it down for the audience really quick. It's, that initial touch point of just, hey, this is the position, this is what it's going to be paid, or this is the salary range, and this is, this is the location and basic job description. Is this something you're going to be able to do? And that was always done by, an admin person or HR director, or in a lot of situations, the recruiter. And obviously the recruiter dug a lot deeper into it than just those, because, you guys are trained professionals at that. So, but then the first phone call with myself, if I was directly hiring for the position, was 30 minutes of, hey, I just want this candidate's story. Tell me everything. I may have some questions here and there, but I'm not gonna sit there and drill you on questions. It's really to find out, who that person is and what their experience has been. And then I didn't typically, I would say probably 98% of the time, we ended the phone call there and I said, look, we're gonna go to the next step of, me giving you the company story. and because there's things there that you need to understand with, you know, not just who we are, but where did we come from and how that plays into, you know, the values of the company. And that gives them some time to step away for, you know, 24 or 48 hours, really thinking about, you know, what they've said. Same thing, you know, from my standpoint, I can kind of think about that as well. And then, you know, we'll have that next, I would have loved to have put in a 30-minute phone call, but it typically ended up being an hour or longer of just giving them the company story and, you know, how we got started and, you know, things that happened in my career, not specifically with, you know, with that company at that point in time, but things that happened in my career that shaped, you know, the core values that we had. So, and then they're able to step away from that and, again, another 24, 48 hours, really think about that. And if it's something that's going to fit with them. And most times I found them to be very excited about it. And in a lot of situations, you know, after I got their story, you know, 50% of them didn't make it to that second phone call anyway, where I gave them the company background. So at least I didn't have to go into that conversation with them thinking that they're going to hear about the company. They knew that they were just going to be talking about themselves, and I didn't waste time telling them something that they didn't need to hear.
Right. And if you don't mind, I'd love to add something really quickly to that. That's something that I am currently experiencing and doing a lot of. I'm working with a handful of clients that are more or less new to the student housing industry, or they're a newly formed company. You know, they might own 3, 4, or 5 assets, and that's it. And, you know, they're coming from large companies, you know, just for example, say ACH, which is huge. So I'm letting them know this is a smaller company. It's going to be a little bit different, but this is a great time to get in with them. You're really getting in at the ground floor. You'd be one of the first people that was up for a promotion to, you know, say a regional manager as the company grows. And that really helps them to form, you know, an image in their mind as well that, hey, we're setting my expectations early. It's not going to operate the same as a large company. I'm going to be more valued. I'm going to be more, you know, in the spotlight than just, you know, one of thousands and thousands of employees. Yeah. And I think that's really helpful as well. And it's I don't think it's fair to a candidate to not tell them these things up front.
Yeah, yeah. So let's go into the next question. We kind of touched on it a little bit before, but Stephanie, what recommendation would you have for people that are in this industry who are looking to advance to the next level position?
I think, to me, this applies most to GMs or maybe leasing managers. I always tell people to work, they absolutely should work in more than one market. You know, if you have experience at a 300-bed property in Oklahoma and, you know, you think you're ready to be a regional, then I would advise you first to go look at a 1,500-bed property in Gainesville or College Station. There are differences in every size of property. You know, a 300-bed property is not going to be the same as a 1,500-bed property. And Norman, Oklahoma is not going to be the same market as, you know, Tallahassee. I just tell them to get experience in many different markets at many different size properties. If corporate has committees, you know, for example, a social media committee, try to join the social media committee. Just get involved in many different aspects as you can. That's really going to, there's going to be one person who's done that, and then there's going to be the other candidate who, you know, has had held one position with the same company in the same market for 10 years. To me, I'm going to choose the other candidate who has less experience but has more diverse experience. That's what's really important to me, and that's something that I look at as well when I'm reviewing resumes.
Yeah, I think, and not just you know, not just different markets, but, you know, having lease up experience versus having, you know, a stable property. Yeah, it's easy.
Right. Exactly. Try to get in on a lease up, try to get in on a rehab, try to, before you become a regional, try to get into a floater or an op specialist role. something that's going to just diversify, you know, owners want to diversify their portfolio. I think candidates need to diversify their resumes.
Yeah, and that's a great point on, you know, on trying things out. And Nancy, I think in our preliminary questions, you kind of mentioned the same thing of, you know, being able to take on some additional responsibilities that are, you know, outside the property level. You know, I would caution regional managers and those that are in that position where you can, you know, you're thinking, gosh, I could really use some help on this. And in a lot of situations, you'll have general managers who are looking to take that next step up, and they're quick to volunteer for something, and that's great. I don't want to suggest that, you know, general managers or other folks at an on-site level not raise their hand to do those things, but the leader in that situation, the regional manager or the executive that is you know, calling out on those employees, you've got to remember, whatever it is that they're going to help you out on, if it's Stephanie, as you mentioned, the social media board or whatever that they may have within their company, just keep in mind that that's not their main job, and that they've got residents that they've got to serve at their property, that's got to be their top priority.
Right. Of course. I absolutely agree with you. And I think companies are, I think they are aware of that as well. But if there's any way that you can get involved without losing sight of your, you know, of your actual job, then I would encourage it. And a lot of times people say, you know, I really love doing this. And instead of making a move to regional, they decide they want to go into a corporate marketing role or, you know, work their way in a different career path. I think that's why it's helpful as well.
Yeah. I see a lot of folks that will, the big one is to help out on an acquisitions team, right? Get to travel a little bit, spend two weeks in, you know, another market, you know, help a new team come on board. And, you know, that's great. And that's great exposure. And I would really suggest everybody be able to do that. But I've also seen that work out where, you know, a general manager ends up doing, you know, four or five of these, you know, within an academic cycle, and then all of a sudden their property doesn't lease up or something else happened, you know, from a performance standpoint on their main property. And especially if that's a third party client or third party owner, and, you know, then all of a sudden you find out as that third party owner, well, the management company's taking my GM, you know, 10 weeks out of the year to take him to, you know, another property that I don't own. There's going to be issues with that.
Right. And, you know, and I certainly don't advise being reckless about it. But if going to a new, you know, I would say go to a new acquisition as your new project, not go to a new acquisition and float around and be on the social media committee. Pick one thing that is not going to be full time and help on that. Don't try to be too ambitious and don't be reckless about it. Choose one project that you want to work on and run with that one.
Yeah. Nancy, any input from you?
No, I think you guys both covered everything that I was going to say. And I know, Wes, you and I have had conversations about this prior. And I get this question a ton from folks, you know, at the site level that want to be able to build their resume and continue to move up. And, you know, I tell them exactly, you know, what you and I talked about. Raise your hand, you know, cross train a little bit, get involved in different areas. And they have to be willing. They really almost have to be willing to relocate. They, like Stephanie mentioned, getting experience in different markets is extremely important, I think. And, the things that I feel that they need to do.
Yeah. Different markets, different size properties, different. Yeah. All of that is, if you're the type of person that ultimately sees themselves as a regional manager or above, and I shouldn't say regional manager, I also want to, it's probably even more important because, you know, most regional managers are, you know, really tuned into the operations and the fiscal side of their portfolio, where most companies, especially in the student housing space, are leaning more towards having, you know, regional marketing people that are a bit more focused in on the marketing and the leasing and revenue management than what you see on the multifamily side with regional managers, just because that cycle is so tight. Pre-leasing's happening earlier and earlier each year. Many projects are taking longer to lease up as well. So I've seen most of the student housing companies really relying on that regional marketing person to focus on it and taking some of that burden off the traditional regional manager role. So the next question I had, and I'm really looking forward to this one. And Nancy, I'll start with you on this. What other areas have you recruited from for student housing positions that were, and when I say what other areas, what other industries, be it hospitality, there may be something not even completely, just completely out of left field, but what type of industry areas have you recruited from in the past that you found them to be successful in student housing? Not just, not just the one person that, you pulled out of a hot dog stand in Pittsburgh that had a great stint as a property manager, because everybody, there's always the one exception, right? But I'm not getting any laughs from you on the hot dog stand, so I'm assuming you didn't find that very funny, but.
I chuckled to myself. when I first began working in the student housing space, it was at its infancy. I remember, going to conferences, and it really, well, there weren't any student housing specific conferences at that point in time, and student housing really wasn't even looked at as a real estate product at first. That certainly has changed over time. Yeah. I mean, it's changed tremendously. So, back in those times, I was, we were having to go into hospitality and into conventional multifamily a lot to find folks. I'm not having to do that as much today. I think there's a plethora of really, really strong student housing people, and we're not having a problem finding those people. The one area that we do still pull from for several of our clients is just a pure sales background. I have a client that does a lot of new development, and they have, a new development lease up general manager on property for, for the first year or so when this property is under development before it goes operational. And, what are those people doing? They're not running an operating property at that point. They are pre-leasing and marketing that property. So, those clients want somebody that just really has a strong sales mentality.
Right.
And they feel like, if they stay with the property once it becomes operational, they can teach them that part. It's a lot more difficult to teach, that softer skill set, those of sales.
That's a very good point. Stephanie?
Yeah, people are not going to like my answer very much, but I really don't pull outside of the industry at all. People come to me for, the best of the best student housing candidates. They want an experienced manager or successful leaser who can, jump in and hit the ground running. So I really only stick within the industry, with the exception of marketing. I've placed a lot of high-level marketing folks that have no prior student housing or even real estate background because of their creative skills. But other than that, I really stick to experienced industry professionals.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's two examples of, I wouldn't necessarily say GMs, but certainly leasing managers, assistant managers, And these people have, people I've recruited out of these two industries have moved up quickly. In fact, one's a senior vice president at a national student housing firm right now, is, and I don't know if this is really still true, but cell phone sales, you know, the retail sales guys, I have not pulled anybody out of there in a good decade. But very early on, and you know, you guys are old enough to remember the first cell phone that you bought, and how how that was really a different experience than what it is today when you go into the AT&T or Verizon store. But Sprint had a really just top-notch sales training that had a lot of parallels with what we were doing on the leasing side, and I got some really good candidates. You know, in the mid 2005 to 2008 range, that came out of that industry. I really don't know if that stands true today. I've seen a couple that have had that experience in their background, but didn't come directly from that background. The other one was car rental. I've been very impressed with folks that have been involved with Enterprise's management program. There's three people I could name right now that have come out of that program that are in the student housing industry that have done remarkably well. So I don't know what it is, you know, necessarily about those two industries, but it's worked pretty well. And the one thing I would, you know, the one piece of advice that I would give for managers that are site level managers that are having to recruit for community assistance and, you know, that kind of peer sales group at the college level, because you're talking about a lot of, you know, 18 to 21 year olds that, you know, could really, you know, they never went off to school aspiring to be a leasing agent, right? But that's what the industry uses, you know, because of the peer-to-peer sales. And I think there's certainly a lot of benefit to that. But the one piece of advice I would give is, for that general manager, no, you are always recruiting. You know, if you're a GM in Chapel Hill and you've got, you know, every year you're going to turn over four or five leasing agents or community assistants, you need to be thinking every time that you go out to eat and you get a waitress that just gives you top-notch service and has great personality. You may not need them right then and there, but you'll probably need them at some point in time. Make sure you give them a card and, you know, tell them who you are and what you do, and try to, you know, continue recruiting that person, because that's what makes it really easy when you're stuck in that situation where someone ends up giving you notice that you weren't expecting, and, you know, all of a sudden you've got a pool of four or five people that, you know, you've spoke with over the past year that you can quickly call on and see if any of them are looking for a job change. So,
yeah, I think in that regard,
I absolutely do agree with you. I used to pull a lot of leasing agents from retail, or like you said, a waiter or a waitress. In that instance, I absolutely do agree with you. I think it's a little bit higher positions.
Yeah.
The management positions that I don't go outside of the industry, but yes, you are absolutely correct on that.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a great point as well, Wes. And, you know, you mentioned they're working with those 18 to 21 year olds. I would imagine a lot of times they don't even get notice, you know. Unfortunately, those folks just decide they're not going to show up to work the next day.
Yeah.
You know, I would imagine that happens a lot. I wanted to touch on, if I could, you mentioned pulling from different industries, and you mentioned Enterprise. I can't really speak for Sprint, but I am familiar with Enterprise. And going back to what we talked about earlier in providing good training programs for the folks that you're bringing on board, Enterprise, I think, has been so successful because they have a training program that is just top notch.
Yeah.
You know, and those folks that you're pulling from there have gone through, you know, a stringent long-term training, you know, and it pays off in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. So guys, on this last question, I'm sorry, it's not the last question, the second to last question. We've seen Gen Z come into this demographic now that we are servicing with the freshman class this year. And as that group begins to enter the workforce, they've certainly started entering the workforce for a lot of student housing, part-time positions, and at that community assistant level. You guys have your hand on the pulse of I don't want to necessarily say trends, but the differences with each generation. And as Gen Z comes in, I wanted to talk about the things that you feel like employers need to keep in mind when they're going through that recruiting process.
I think really the most important thing to do for me personally and for hiring managers out there is to really set their expectations early on. They see a manager and say, I want to be a manager. And they want to move through the ranks very quickly. And they don't necessarily think about having to learn each piece of their job and the next job up the career ladder. I've seen a lot of CAs and leasing agents get free housing, and this might not always be the case. So just setting expectations early on from, you may not get this. We need you to learn this beforehand, before you move into the next role. Just letting them know from the very beginning what their career path might be or what is expected of them, I think that really helps to really get a grasp on their position, on the industry as a whole. And I think that their employees will be happier in the long run rather than, if they apply for a promotion really quickly and they don't get the job. They just need to know they need to learn certain things before moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just making them knowledgeable of the industry and sort of how things work. I think that's the best bet for everyone.
Yeah, yeah, and that's not even a Gen Z thing. I mean, that's anybody or has been any generation coming into that age group and starting to understanding what building a career is about. You can't just step out and it's given to you on a platter. So, I think that needs to be something. I mean, obviously we're now in Gen Z, but, even as we're ushering some of these, latter millennials in, it's something that we've, it's just natural at that part of someone's life to have a mindset that way. So, Nancy?
Yeah, I think that's a great point as well. I think something else you need to think about is that they are, very technology and social media focused, even more so, than the millennials. So there's going to be a breakdown in, interpersonal communication with this generation. Do they have the writing skills? Do they have the communication skills? I think that's going to be lacking and something that will have to be looked at with
now,
this generation.
I'm a 40-year-old man, and I still used a poop emoji last night when I sent a text message. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like when my oldest daughter is 12 now. And I could go to a text message she sent me earlier, and it's it's three words and about five different emojis. And the crazy thing is I actually understood what she said. Yeah. I think, you'd mentioned earlier, making sure that this, as you're thinking about those kind of challenges, or I don't know if we want to call it challenges or if that's just the way, the human race is evolving. If you want to call it that, you got to think about it, how that affects the training side as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we touched on as well was just allowing them to see the big picture, allowing them to see what, the company as a whole is where they're moving, what's going to be happening with that organization and the piece that they bring to the table, how it impacts, you know, what happens to the entire property. And, you know, they'll be a more engaged employee if you allow them to see that big picture.
Yeah, transparency is huge, not even not just with the, you know, with millennials, but even much so with Gen Z. I think it's a better I think it's a better environment to work in, quite honestly. So, you know, one of the things that has always kind of shocked me from the generation, be it millennials or even now with Gen Z, is the type of care that they really want to have for their property, and how frustrated they may get from time to time on things that they hear, things that may end up being rumored, about a potential sale for the property, or maybe they just got really bad information, and there was a recap that was happening with the property, and so there were a lot of inspections going on, and everybody immediately starts thinking about a new ownership group coming in. It's amazing to me. I mean, I know a lot of, not even general managers yet, but students who were CAs when they were 18, 19 years old and have been at property for, you know, 4 or 5 years, and they've actually seen 2 or 3 ownership groups. And, so immediately rumors start flying around about what's going to be happening with the property. And they get a little bit, you know, disappointed, maybe even disengaged. That's threatening, and to what's going to happen, because when they're disengaged, they're not going to be focused on leasing. They're not going to be focused on selling, you know, what the property is doing, and because what they're doing is caring for the residents for the most part. And if they feel like the ownership is selling off, then there's, you know, they don't believe in that property, and that's just not it at all. There's other reasons behind it. So I think having that conversation and being transparent with those student workers on that process, I think, is important. I always made sure, you know, when I was working for a merchant developer, we were, and Nancy, you and I had discussions on this, when I would, we were building the property for the intention of selling it. And we came in very early on and even, you know, worked with the student staff to say, hey, this is our plan. These are our intentions with what we're going to do with the property. And, you know, if you are part of that success, you're going to be paid for it. And, you know, they got a sale bonus, and in many cases it was more money than they had ever seen at one time. So they were really bought into that process. And I think with Gen Z, that's going to be even more important, because I think they're just generally untrusting if someone hasn't taken the time to explain things to them. Guys, I'm sorry that took incredibly long to to get out. And this is going way too long. So let me get to the last question here. And this is just going to be a fire round. Don't want any explanations behind it or anything. So we talked earlier about what makes up kind of the best market for you guys to recruit for. So now I just want, we're going to name names and just give me the worst market that you've had experience in recruiting from, that I don't want to say you don't want to stay around or stay, that you don't ever want to recruit for it again, but really quick, Stephanie.
I don't say it's the worst, but I think College Station, Texas is the hardest for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Nancy?
And Wes, you'll recognize this market, but Morgantown, West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. I agree. That one, too. That one, too.
Yeah. It's, and both of those markets are very, there's a lot of competition there. There's a lot of... both of those markets, we could talk about Bill Bayless and ACC coming out of Morgantown, West Virginia, College Station, Texas. There are a ton of people in the corporate and executive roles that have come out of that market. Getting, I don't know what it is. It's It's a small remote area with everything revolving around the institution, and people just don't want to stay there after they graduate.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your thoughts on the recruiting process and what's going on today in the student housing world. And look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me, too.
Great. I really enjoyed that interview. A little lengthy, as most of my interviews are, but you know, I don't think I've got any real takeaways that we need to extend it any longer for. But
no, I think everything was covered really, really well.
Yeah. So you know, coming up, we'll go straight from, you know, the employee part or straight from recruiting to talking about culture. We've got a great interview coming up in the next podcast.
Very excited. Very excited about this interview.
Yeah. You know, when I started the podcast, I can't remember if it was you or someone else, said something about, was, you know, do you want to interview the property management companies? And I was like, no, absolutely not. Cause you know, as long as I've been in this industry, there's just too many, there's just so many relationships that I was like, you know, I really don't want to, I don't want to pick favorites or anything like that. I made one exception to that, and that was for Cardinal Group out of Denver. And a few weeks ago when I was in Florida for a conference, I sat down and spent some time with Alex O'Brien. I've had several phone calls with Dale DeWitt, kind of prepping for this interview, and it was just one of those things where, you know, I said, look, guys, I don't know what it is that you're doing, but it doesn't matter what, you know, what property I go on that, or what market I go into to one of your properties, or, you know, conversing with someone on LinkedIn, your people are on fire. You know, it's, you guys are they love being a part of Cardinal, you know, and I want to know what's behind that, because you had to be very intentional in order to create that type of culture. And man, they really unpack a lot, and looking forward to everybody hearing about that one.
I am very excited about it. It's like I already said, it is, they're one of my favorite companies. I tell everybody that, so I'm not afraid to say it here pre-recorded. So I think it's fantastic, and you're absolutely right. It's everybody that goes there, it's one of those companies they go to, they stay, and if they leave, it's like their ex. They just keep looking back over their shoulder, listing off all the things they miss.
Yeah.
I'm really stoked.
Well, cool. Well, guys, have a great week, and we will talk with you next time. Take care. Mm-hmm.